This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, my name is Mary McConnell. This is the third hour of USA Today. This is Thursday. It's the 9th of May, 2023, and this is from Radio Reading Services of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. In this hour, I'm going to read the TV listings and the obituary notices, both from the Cincinnati Inquirer, and then we're going to continue to the life section of USA Today. And we're going to start with this evening's TV listings. Again, this from the Inquirer. And we're going to start off with Channel 5, WLWT, coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. It is the local news until 7:30. At 7:30, we have Access Hollywood, that from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. From 8 until 9, it's Law and Order. Coming up from 9 to 10, it's Law and Order Special Victims Unit. From 10 to 11 o'clock, Law and Order Organized Crime. 11 o'clock, we have local news on WLWT Channel 5. That goes to 11:30, and it's followed by The Tonight Show. On WCPO, that's Channel 9, we have local news from 7 to 7:30. 7:30 to 8, it's Extra. Again, this is on Channel 9. Coming up from 8 until 9 o'clock, it's 911. Grey's Anatomy follows from 9 until 10 o'clock. From 10 until 11, we have Station 19 on Channel 9. Local news follows at 11 o'clock till 11:30. And then we have Jimmy Kimmel Live. On WKRC, that's Channel 12, we have Inside Edition from 7 to 7:30. Entertainment Tonight follows from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, it's Young Sheldon till 8:30. Ghosts, that's on from 8:30 until 9. So Help Me Todd follows from 9 until 10 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, it's Elsbeth that runs until 11. Local 12 News is on from 11 until 11:30. And then we have The Late Show. On CINCW, that's 12.2. Family Matters, 7 to 7:30, and again from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. Patty Stranger, the matchmaker, she is on from 8 until 9. Lovers and Liars follows from 9 until 10 o'clock. At 10 to 11, it's the National Desk, and it's the National Desk continuing from 11 until midnight. On Channel 19, that's WXIX, we have Wheel of Fortune from 7 to 7:30. Jeopardy's on from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. Next Level Chef is on from 8 until 9. Lego Masters, that runs from 9 until 10. At 10 o'clock, we have Fox 19 Now News at 10. That's from 10 to 11. More Fox 19 local news from 11 to 11:30. And then we have Friends on Channel 19. On WCET, that's Channel 48. It's the PBS NewsHour from 7 until 8 o'clock. This Old House is on from 8 to 8:30. Ask This Old House is on from 8:30 until 9 o'clock. 9 till 10, it's called The Midwife. From 10 to 11 o'clock, it's Masterpiece. It's Howard's End this time. 11 until midnight, we have Amanpour and Company. On MyNet, Channel 64, it's The Big Bang Theory from 7 to 7:30. Young Sheldon follows from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. 8 to 9, it's Dateline. Again, this is on Channel 64. From 9 until 10, we have Chicago PD. We have Local 12 News on Channel 64 from 10 to 10:30. Big Bang Theory is on from 10:30 to 11. Then it's Young Sheldon from 11 to 11:30, and it's followed by Two and a Half Men that runs till midnight. On Channel 2, that's NBC, it's Inside Edition from 7 to 7:30. 7:30 till 8, it's Jeopardy. Law and Order runs from 8 until 9 o'clock. Law and Order SVU is on from 9 until 10. Law and Order Organized Crime, that goes from 10 to 11 o'clock. Then comes the news from 11 to 11:30, and it's followed by The Tonight Show. On CBS, that's Channel 7, it's Wheel of Fortune from 7 to 7:30. 7:30 until 8, we have Entertainment Tonight. Young Sheldon's on from 8 to 8:30. Ghost from 8:30 till 9. So Help Me Todd is on from 9 until 10. From 10 to 11, we have Elsbeth. Then we have the news from 11 to 11:30, and The Late Show follows at 11:30 on Channel 7. Moving along to Channel 14, that's a PBS affiliate. DW News. It's on from 7 to 7:30. 7:30 till 8, it's the news continuing. Doc Martin is on from 8 until 9. Midsummer is on from 9 to 9:30. 9:30 until 10:30, it's Midsummer Murders. At 10:30, we have Islands to 11, BBC World News 11 to 11:30, and DW News is on from 11:30 till midnight. On Channel 16, another PBS station, we have BBC News 7 to 7:30. Curious, that's on from 7:30 till 8. House is on from 8 to 8:30. Ask This Old House is on from 8:30 till 9. 9 till 10, it's Antique Roadshow. From 10 until 11, we have Independent Lens. They're going to announce what's on at 11 till 11:30, but at 11:30, it's Legacy, again, on Channel 16. On Channel 22, that's ABC, we have a couple of family feuds, one from 7 to 7:30, the 7 from 7:30 until 8. 911, that's on from 8 until 9 o'clock. Grey's Anatomy follows from 9 till 10. Station 19 from 10 to 11. News from 11 to 11:30, and then Jimmy Kimmel Live. Looking at Fox 22.2, Big Bang Theory kicks things off from 7 to 7:30, and again from 7:30 till 8, it's Big Bang Theory. Next Level Chef is on from 8 until 9. Lego Masters is on from 9 until 10. News is on from 10 to 11. iCrime, it's on from 11 to 11:30, and then comes Family Matters from 11:30 until midnight. On CW, that's Channel 26, it's Young Sheldon from 7 to 7:30, and again from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. Patty Stanger, that runs from 8 until 9. Lovers and Liars, it's on from 9 till 10. We have a couple of news editions, one from 10 to 10:30, the second from 10:30 to 11. Friends is on from 11 to 11:30 and again from 11:30 until midnight. On Channel 43, we have Chicago PD all night. There's one from 7 till 8. There's a Chicago PD from 8 until 9, again from 9 till 10. And Chicago PD continues from 10 to 11 and from 11 till midnight. And we're going to wrap things up with Channel 54. That's a PBS affiliate. And they have the PBS News Hour on from 7 until 8. Antique Roadshow, it's on from 8 till 9. Doc Martin's on from 9 till 10. Father Brown's on from 10 to 11. BBC World News from 11 to 11:30. And we wrap things up with Kentucky News from 11:30 until midnight. And now we're going to move to the obituaries from the Cincinnati Inquirer. And again, this is for today. And today is the 9th of May. Michael Edward Beresford was 73 of Cincinnati, and he passed away on the 1st of May. Rebecca Alice Daly was 91. She lived in Anderson Township, and she passed away on the 5th of May. T.P. White and Sons Funeral Home handling the arrangements. Tamar, or Tommy, Moskowitz was 87 of Cincinnati, May the 6th. They died. Weill Cahn Funeral Home handling the arrangements. Donna Sue Smith was 80 of Latonia. She passed away on the 4th of May. Swindler and Curran Funeral Home in Latonia handling the funeral. And Karen S. or Kitchy Wagner was 80 of Cincinnati. She died on the 3rd of May. Her arrangements are being held at Spring Grove Funeral Homes. And now we're going to delve into USA Today's Life section again for May the 9th, 2024. And we're going to start things off with an article about the movies. And this one is Leeches Were a Royal Pain in the Ape Kingdom. Marco Della Cava writes this again for USA Today. You'd think that the two stars of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is in theaters beginning Friday, and it's the latest installment in the 56-year-old sci-fi franchise, would want to talk a lot about apes, but no, we're talking leeches here, people. The leeches were disgusting, says Owen Teague, who plays Kingdom ape protagonist Noah, literally cringing at the memory. As you can imagine, Kingdom is rife with impressive computer-generated magic thanks to Weta FX, the New Zealand firm that conjured the imaginary worlds of Lord of the Rings and Avatar. But the leeches encountered by the actors during the 6 months of filming in locations that included Australian jungles were all too real. They were everywhere. If you saw any grass, the leeches would be there, says Freya Allen, who plays May, a human fighting to reconnect with others like her on a planet ruled by apes. At least Owen had a suit on, a lycra shell to which motion capture bales were attached, but my costume had nothing but holes in it. But leeches weren't the only real-world hazard in this fantasy shoot. At one point, somebody had to gently brush a white-tailed spider off my face. So that was pretty scary, says Teague. And then there were rogue eucalyptus tree branches. The tall, scented trees often drop their limbs, especially when winds kick up. We were in and around the trees a lot, so they were always a concern, says Alan. I honestly didn't think I'd be worrying about trees, but we were. In fact, one case cascading limb almost seriously injured a crew member, says Kingdom director Wes Ball. That was not a good thing. That was a close call, he says somberly. It almost hit somebody. Kingdom, it's a mix of real locations and computer-generated scenes. Those dangers aside, shooting in real locations is partly what renders Kingdom so compelling. Deciphering which scenes are real and which are computer created is difficult. There are stunning sequences in what is truly an Eden-like paradise provided by Australian settings. But other scenes, such as those by a river, feature no real water at all. I always tried to be on a real location if we could, says Ball. That said, there are 35 minutes of the movie where every blade of grass and leaf blowing in the wind was created by a computer. But hopefully nobody notices that. You don't want people saying, hey, those were pretty visual effects. Advances in so-called mocap or motion capture technology in films such as Avatar, The Way of the Water, is what allowed Ball to create his simian world. Actors were outfitted with thin suits dotted with small balls to allow computers to accurately place ape skin. Head-mounted cameras captured the action in front of them. The result is a movie set where the human star, Alan, is interacting with other humans who are covered in balls while acting like apes. For Teague, that meant changing his voice and speech patterns while developing a body language that mimicked a chimpanzee's natural posture, shoulders hunched, body leaning to one side. You're not impersonating an ape, you're creating a character who happens to have ape-like characteristics, says Teague. You spend so long doing it that you just forget all that and accept that the character is who he is. Alan insists acting opposite a man playing an ape was effortless. Every part of Owen is in that ape, she says. Sure, he may not look like one, but the effect for me was absolutely incredible. Director Wes Ball was unsure if another installment was wise. This latest installment almost didn't come to pass. Ball's immediate thought when contemplating a new series of the Apes film after the last trilogy concluded back in 2017 was, why bother? The last one, War for the Planet of the Apes, directed by Matt Reeves, was so well done and wrapped up the story of ape leader Caesar. To just do another movie tied to some of those characters felt wrong, Ball says. But the previous 9 films have grossed more than $2.1 billion worldwide, according to the numbers. So we need to expand this world. He decided to start his film a few generations in the future, featuring a peaceful clan of eagle-training chimps suddenly enslaved by a warmongering group of primates. Into this mix comes May, who has retained the ability to speak. Noah and May team up to help each other. While every Apes movie offers a critique of the human condition, Ball says his aim wasn't to lecture. Spectacle and truth, that's what I was after, he says. This series is about humanity, that we see ourselves, the good and the bad, in these apes. I want to simply immerse people in this world fully. Given that the ending of this new installment hints at a sequel or two, That immersion will require the return of its actors and another leech battle. Our Alan Antigue game, hey, bring it on. They can have another go at me, says Alan. And I'll take another white-tailed spider on the face, Teague adds. Ball laughs when told of his star's responses. Good to know, he says. And hey, it's a small price to pay. You don't want to work in front of a blue screen in a studio. Well, you're going to have to get out in the real world and get some leeches on you. Continuing with the life section, again, of USA Today. And this is on streaming, and Con Queen unmasks Hollywood grifter. Aaron Johnson writes this, again for USA Today. It would make for quite the script. A global grifter lures hopeful actors, photographers, filmmakers, screenwriters, and makeup artists around the world by impersonating the Hollywood elite. Posing as a former Sony executive, Amy Pascal, or producer Wendy Murdoch, director Doug Liman, or former Paramount Pictures CEO Sherry Lansing, the hustler penetrated the pocketbooks of hundreds of victims and inflicted psychological anguish. The nearly decade-long deceits of Hargobind Talarimi and his downfall following his 2020 arrest are chronicled in Hollywood Con Queen. It's a three-part docuseries now streaming on Apple TV+. Talarimi posed as a powerful Hollywood executive, most often women, and entices his victims with job offers, asking some to travel abroad at their own expense, but none of these promised gigs materialized. Filmmaker Will Stratham received an email purportedly from Pascal in 2017 asking him to fly to Jakarta, Indonesia, to capture footage that would be pitched to Netflix for a series. He paid for a trip from his home in Denver, expecting to be reimbursed, and was pressured to return there twice more for additional footage. The total cost, $54,452. Talarimi was the subject of a 2018 Hollywood Reporter expose by journalist Scott Johnson, who appears in the docuseries, and later wrote a book about Talarimi. The two chatted every day for weeks, Johnson says, but he was unsure if Talarimi was truthful or if he too was being conned. At every turn, it was like being in a labyrinth, Johnson tells USA Today in an interview that also included director Chris Smith and private investigator Nicole Costianis, who's featured in the docuseries. At every juncture, you would get led into a different alley, a different corner of this pretty tortured but very interesting mind, and it's sort of like a hall of mirrors. The complexity, Johnson says, kept drawing me back. When motivated, Talarimi, the Hollywood con queen? It's hard to know what fueled her scams, Johnson says, but he believes Talarimi might initially long to be part of show business. When he didn't exceed, his frustration turned into something malignant, a desire for revenge or a desire to inflict some sort of pain on other people who were pursuing similar dreams, Johnson says. This con, even if not lucrative, allowed Talarimi to showcase his ability to impersonate, persuade, and act. I think those were all things that the impersonator wanted to find ways to exploit, and this scam offered that opportunity, Johnson says. And then finally, and this is perhaps the murkiest area, we are probably talking about somebody with some sort of a personality disorder. This is something that people who have done analysis of this person have concluded independently of a legal setting. The hundreds of Hollywood con queen victims. The con queen deluded at least 500 victims out of approximately 2 million, according to the docuseries. For some, it was just a very bizarre experience that they went through, and for other people, it felt traumatic in their experience, depending on how much you invested, Smith says in the interview, not financially, but just in terms of your time and your emotional energy. One actor believed he was communicating with Liman about a potential role. He was asked to attend a video meeting, then to remove his pants and touch himself. He refused. I felt really embarrassed about losing $5,000, the actor said in the docuseries, But had they not tried the sexual stuff and taking me down that route at the end, they probably could have gotten more money from me. The money swindled is not to be overlooked, Castellanos says. For some, it was everything they had, just given where they were, she says. It was relayed to me, for some people, this was their wedding funds. For some people, this was down payments. For some, this was money they had borrowed from their families. Well, where is Talarami now? On June 6, 2023, a judge in the UK ruled that Talarami could be extradited to the US to be prosecuted for the crimes, but he remains in the UK and is fighting extradition. While he has expressed remorse for his cons, Johnson wonders if the settlement or the sentiment is sincere. Some of that remorse felt real, much of it did not, Johnson says. So again, we circle back to that question of what's real and what isn't. While he was expressing remorse, from what we know, he was still carrying on the scam, he adds, so the answer might be there. And we continue with Lifeline, again from USA Today's Life section. And how was your day? Well, let's look at Jelly Rolls. Jelly Roll is celebrating a fitness milestone. After losing about 70 pounds, the Grammy-nominated singer-rapper-songwriter, who is 39 years old, completed a 5K race Tuesday in California. In an interview with Entertainment Tonight at the event, Jelly Roll, whose real name is Jason Bradley DeFord, said he got really emotional at the finish line. I couldn't walk a mile when I started trying to do this back in January. I left here feeling really motivated, he said, adding he plans to participate in a half marathon sometime next year. Well, today again, it's May the 9th, 2024. Is it your birthday? Well, if it is your birthday, look who's celebrating today with you. Daniel Frances is 46. Adrina Partridge is 39. And Billy Joel, he turns 70 today. Here is your horoscopes. Again, this is for May the 9th, 2024. Aries, that's March 21st to April 19th. The moon's auspicious connection to Mars finds you standing up and being counted. If you're a Taurus, April 20th to May the 20th, know your worth. As the moon and Mars connect, decisions made today are in alignment with your conscience and confidence. For Gemini, that's May 21st to June 21st, as the moon and Mars harmonize, you find the balance between competition and cooperation. For Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd, as the moon and Mars harmonize, compassion motivates a professional mission. For Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd, bringing people together, rally your peers around an idea or objective as the moon and Mars harmoniously connect. For Virgo, August the 23rd to September 22nd, your tenacity and drive turn your superiors' heads as the moon and Mars harmonize. If you're a Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd, working together, you and a partner are a winning team as the moon and Mars harmoniously connect. For Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st, workplace successes, trusting your intuitive powers helps you achieve a business win as the moon and Mars harmonize. For Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st, as the moon and Mars harmonize, take the initiative to further a romantic connection. If you're a Capricorn, December 22nd to January the 19th, if you want it done right, you have to do it yourself as the moon and Mars harmonize. Aquarius, that's January the 20th to February the 18th. Today's harmonious connection between the moon and Mars is perfect for socializing and also for networking. And we conclude with Pisces, February the 19th to March the 20th. As the moon and Mars harmonize, an impulsive buy is well deserved. You've worked hard and you deserve something nice. And we're going to continue with USA Today's Life section. This from the Health and Wellness Department. Singles, stay hopeful on Mother's Day. Aaron Jensen writes this for USA Today. On Mother's Day, I'll be excited to celebrate the moms in my life. If the occasion resembles last year, I'll likely be seated at a long table in a nicer, casual restaurant. I'll silently think of how grateful I am for my mom, my person who brags to her friends about the smallest of my accomplishments, including making tasty guacamole. And I wonder why I, a writer, can never represent my love for her in the space of a pricey greeting card. My eyes will fall to my sister-in-law. I'll take the time to appreciate the effort she puts into being a mom to my two young nieces, who melt my heart every time they call me Aunt Boo Boo. And when I look at my nieces, who will likely be steadfastly coloring kids' menus or negotiating crayon usage, should their packs contain different colors, I'm going to try to hold back the tears that start to form as I briefly wonder to my single 36.83333-year-old self, why none of this has happened to me yet. Why is it taking my forever person so long? How unimaginably wonderful would it feel to have a tottering little one cling to my leg and call me mom? I recently started working with a dating coach who introduced me to the concept of evidence boards. Similar to a vision board, it's a collection of confirmation that what you want is out there. I'm to document times I've experienced what I'm looking for in a partner as proof it's possible. And while I'm still waiting for Theo James's single, empathetic, cheeky doppelganger to appear, I thought assembling an evidence board of sorts for others, feeling doubtful that they'll one day be a mom, would be helpful. Like a delivery you're anxiously tracking, just because you don't have what you want right this moment doesn't mean it's not on the way. And you should know you're not waiting alone. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention reports that the birth rate of mothers ages 35 to 39 and 40 to 44 has risen, that in between 2020 and 2023. Hoda Kotb became a mom at 52. Did you know that Hoda's second daughter got her name? Kotb, who adopted Haley in 2017 at age 52, and Hope in 2019, told me in March that she knew her name would be Hope. I didn't have to see her. I didn't have to know anything, said Kotb, 59, during a conversation about her children's book, Hope is a Rainbow. She's what I'd hoped for and what I'd hoped for our family, and she came true. I think Kotb that told her story comforts me, and she assured me that I have a long runway ahead. And it's so funny because blessings are so strange, she added. Some people get them all when they're 20, and some people get them when they're 30, and some people get them when they're 40, and mine came at 50. You just don't know what life has in store for you, but whenever it happens, it's magical. I'm kind of glad it happened now. I'm kind of glad Hope came now, and my family started now, because I had this whole other life ahead of me, which is glorious. Mindy Kaling had her first child at 38. When I chatted with Mindy Kaling during Austin SXSW Festival back in March, I brought up our mutual love of romantic comedies, and I wondered if she felt any sadness about her life not following the rom-com formula. Kaling revealed how she knew she was ready to be a mom to her daughter, Catherine, 6, and son, Spencer, 3. I think when I was in my mid-30s, I sort of started getting tired of the parties that I was going to, where it was like men my age, and then the women were all like 12 years younger than us. And I started being like, oh, I think that maybe the vibe I want is to be around people who are my age and children, Kaling said. I felt like I had that longing for a change of pace, and that's what really made me like, I'm ready for this next part of my life to begin. Savannah Guthrie entered motherhood at age 42. When Savannah Guthrie and I chatted about her book, Mostly What God Does, in January, she identified with my yearning for a family. I felt exactly the same way, and I felt such a longing for a family and home and stability, and it was the one thing that I could not make happen for myself. And I was so disappointed and so sad about that for so long, says Guthrie. She's a mom to Vale, who is 9, and Charlie, who is 7. And I remember my mom saying to me, "You know, Savannah, there's nothing wrong with you. That is what your heart's desire is. It's okay to want those things. It's so taken for granted by so many that, oh, of course, that will happen for you," Guthrie 52 added. "And if it doesn't, then you think, well, what's wrong with me?" Guthrie said not to settle. "You can make mistakes when you get impatient for your family that you dream of and all that stuff. And it's a lot of heartache, and you can spare yourself," she said. She advised that we wait with expectancy. "You're going to wait anyway. Why don't you get a choice about that?" she said. "It's how you wait, and whether it's for your life partner or something at work or your career or somebody to recognize your talent, we all have to wait. And I'd rather wait with hope." And we're going to continue with health and wellness. Again, this from today's USA's Life section. David Oliver writes this in Health and Wellness, and it's entitled "Reindeer Explores Trauma of Sexual Abuse." Baby Reindeer, a chill-inducing Netflix limited series, weaves together a twisted tapestry detailing how trauma takes over our lives. But a central question looms at its center. How does our trauma shape us, especially when it comes to something as grave as sexual abuse? The series is based on true events. It tells the story of Donnie, who's played by Richard Gadd, reenacting a version of his own life. He's a bartender and a wannabe comedian who serves Martha, Jessica Gunning, a free cup of tea, unknowingly starting a years-long odyssey that begins with thousands of harassing emails and gets worse from there. Amid the harassment and the trauma, Donnie reflects on past abuses he suffered that he believes made him a sticking plaster for a predator such as Martha. In a flashback episode, he tells the story of Darian, who's played by Tom Goodwin Hill, who was a much older comedian and writer who groomed and sexually assaulted Donnie. Donnie's experiences with Darian left him traumatized and hollow, ruining his relationship with his girlfriend Keely, who's played by Shalom Brun Franklin. He becomes sexually confused, threatening a new courtship with Terry, played by Naba Mao, a transgender woman Donnie is secretly ashamed to date. Researchers have long tangled with questions regarding sexual abuse and sexual orientation. Can the abuse affect somebody's sexual orientation, or might it simply bring out something lurking under the surface? But these questions ignore the most important takeaway. People should seek help to work through their trauma, lest it linger and become more pronounced. Laura McGuire, who's the founder of the National Center for Equity and Agency, says it's typical that after somebody experiences abuse, they may feel desperate for approval and safety from their abuser again. And that's just the mammal part of our brain. And that doesn't mean that we wanted it or that they're a good person or that we actually love them, but that is how we've been primed to go back into go back to being potentially harmed again. A great deal of confusion and fear. Sexuality is a spectrum, and some people don't realize or explore theirs further until later in life. When somebody is sexually abused, though, their sense of identity, no matter how developed, shakes. And because their selfhood is being so violated and so ignored, so erased, so bulldozed in the process of this abuse, it makes it harder for them to find themselves afterward. So says Andrea Roberts, principal research scientist of environmental health at Harvard University, who studies childhood abuse. They are also quick to blame themselves. Sexual abuse brings shame. It brings self-hatred. It brings self-blame. So says Shitra Raikaven. She's a professor of psychology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. You start to ask, did I ask for it? What did I do? Could I have done things differently? There's a great deal of confusion and fear there. The experiences of male survivors are also complicated by homophobia. 96% of perpetrators against boys and girls are men. Fears of being seen as gay can contribute to feelings of shame and a desire to hide the abuse, especially when their bodies have sexual responses under violence, which is psychologically normal for any survivor. Roberts adds, "It's not uncommon for victims to think that somehow it's their fault, and I think more so if they were aroused when it happened, and that's just devastatingly confusing. When that arousal comes from somebody of the same gender, when you didn't think of yourself as queer before, it's bound to be that much more of a conundrum. Abuse not likely to change your sexuality." McGuire says that many who experience such trauma will spend long periods questioning their sexuality. Sexuality, however, is a mosaic. It is our innate desires and preferences. It's based on the culture, geographic location, historical period that we live in, and more. And then certainly experience plays a part. Though she adds, no single experience is likely to change your sexuality. McGuire notes, we wouldn't be asking these questions if we were talking about people of the opposite sex. If a man sexually abuses a woman, you wouldn't question her attraction to men, for example. The truth about grooming and abuse. What we do know about abuse, without a doubt, predators will prey on anybody they can. They will manipulate, groom, and abuse. They will include people who feel ostracized or going through an internal conflict themselves. When Darian first steps foot into Donnie's comedy show, he seems like someone desperate for a connection. Somebody who probably stomachs shame. We know that people who are queer are going to be experiencing that, whether they have named it as a questioning experience, McGuire says, or they've never put any of these labels on it. That is part of how they're moving through the world. It makes sense, then, that LGBTQ plus people are about 4 times more likely to be victims of violent crimes such as rape and sexual assault. Victims may even find themselves back in dangerous situations, as Donnie does time and again in Baby Reindeer, because they reason, if I'm the problem, I don't have to face the much more painful truth that somebody intentionally found me, primed me, and attacked me, McGuire says. Grooming, in particular, may start small. Let's go back to my place where it's quieter, or I see so much potential in you and your talent. Intimacy, connection, friendship, that turns sour. It is an opening that goes to more dangerous while paradoxically offering safety, Rankhaven says. Grooming is done by all kinds of sexual predators. Well, if Baby Reindeer switches on a light bulb for you, talk to somebody about it. There's hope out there no matter how bad it gets. If you are a survivor of sexual assault, RAINN offers support through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. That number is 800-656-HOPE. Again, that's 800-656-HOPE. Or go online at online.rainn.org. Here are the top 10 books from last week. Again, this is according to USA Today. Coming in at number 10, Who is Taylor Swift? It's a compilation from the Who headquarters. Coming in number 9, A Court of Thorns and Roses from Sarah Maas. Coming in number 8, World on the Brink, How America Can Beat China in the Race for the 21st Century. Garrett Graff writes that book. Number 7, Open Wide, A Cookbook for Friends. That from Benny Blanco. Coming in, number 6, The New Menopause, Navigating Your Path Through Hormonal Change with Purpose, Power, and Facts. That book written by Mary Claire Haver. Kristen Hannah's The Woman comes in number 5. Dog Man, The Scarlet Shedder, a graphic novel. It's Dog Man number 12 in the series. Dave Pilkey writes that. It's in it again at number 4. Number 3, The Demon of Unrest, a saga of hubris, heartbreak, and heroism at the dawn of the Civil War. It's written by Eric Larson. Funny by Emily Henry comes in number two, and Anna Huang's King of Sloth comes in number one. Again, that's according to USA Today. We're going to continue with this hour three, and this time we're going to go to usatoday.com. Again, we're going to look at health and wellness, and this article is entitled Mom Goes Viral for Mother's Day Rules, Suggesting Grandmas Be Celebrated on a Different Day. An Indiana mother is going viral for admitting that she doesn't celebrate her mother or mother-in-law on Mother's Day, but on different days so she can actually enjoy the holiday herself. This may ruffle feathers, says Emily Weiner, TikTok, and she has gathered about 2.1 million views. But I am the one deep into the mothering right now. It's Mother's Day, not Grandmother's Day, Weiner said. In her post, Weiner said she established the Mother's Day rules after spending her first Mother's Day coordinating grandparent visits, and she didn't get to do anything for herself. I was like, I'm not doing this again, she said. So now her family celebrates her mother and mother-in-law on different days, and they do the same setup for Father's Day. I'm going to take the day how I want to take the day, she says in her video. Her mom completely understands. Weiner told USA Today Tuesday that her mother is very supportive of the change she's made around the holiday. As a mom of three daughters, she remembers what it was like to have really little kids and to often feel spread thin, Weiner says. She completely understands my desire to shift the focus, for now, to spending the day with my little family and doing something for myself that I otherwise might not feel like I have the time or energy to do, she says. For this Mother's Day, Weiner's husband made brunch reservations for the family of four, and just like that, she said on TikTok, she will be spending time solo planting in her garden on Mother's Day. Weiner is challenging other women to take the day for themselves too. Changing something that has been the norm for a long time can be hard and uncomfortable, she said. I have found that the best thing to do is to be honest. And if it is ultimately decided that Mother's Day is better shared, then another day can be carved out for mom, she explains. Is Mother's Day reserved for moms in the trenches? The debate about which mom should be celebrated on Mother's Day is not new. Last year, TikTok user B. Muchter posed the question about how to handle the weird holiday when all the mothers seem to want a piece of it. So when I do as a mother who now lives near her mother, when do I celebrate myself? She asked. Another TikToker weighed in on Mother's Day for moms in the trenches, saying, the bottom line is that moms with young kids should do whatever they want to do on Mother's Day without obligation and without guilt. Moms go back and forth in the comments section. When Weiner's mom is supportive of divvying up Mother's Day festivities, not everybody agreed. When did the younger generation just totally throw us out to the wolves? One woman on TikTok said in a video response. It's just the moms with young kids that should really be celebrated on Mother's Day. That's just the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Another poster wrote, yeah, selfish women want your husbands to forget about their moms for you. Can't wait until your kids grow up and do the same to you. One suggested there was enough love to go around for everybody. It honestly shocks me that more people don't just celebrate Mother's Day, Father's Day as one big family get-together and celebrate all the moms and dads in one, the user wrote. Still, many commentators have come to the side of Weiner and other moms of young kids. I think the problem is that the planning gifts kids still all fall on young moms, so it is just another day full of work. The moms and MILs should come to us if they can, one responded. Another user wrote, when I had little kids, the whole day was focused on my ex-mother-in-law at her house. I had to pack up the kids and drive, and it wasn't fun relaxing for me. I'm 52, and I want my son to focus on his wife. I think when they talk about in the trenches, they mean they don't want to have to travel to everybody else all day or just go celebrate only one mom that day, another mother shared. Continuing with USA Today, and again, we are looking at the health and wellness section from usatoday.com. This one is entitled, Women Are Paying Big Money to Scream, Smash Sticks in the Woods, and this is called a rage ritual. Charles Trepani writes this again for USA Today. Kimberly Helmis still gets chills thinking about her first rage ritual. 2.5 years ago after her divorce, the cybersecurity engineer embarked on a retreat to Scotland with Mia Branducci, who is an author and self-described spiritual fairy godmother, better known online as Mia Magic. As part of the retreat, Branducci held a rage ritual. It's a ceremony in which participants scream and beat large sticks on the ground in the woods. Participants are encouraged to think of people and experiences that have wronged them and to scream and swing the sticks for at least 20 minutes or until they can no longer move their arms. Rage rituals have garnered attention on TikTok, where they've resonated particularly with women. In comments, women described how moving it is to see other women embody their anger. And emotion experts say society often discourages women from expressing anger. There's no place where you can see women be able to be angry like that and it not be condemned, Helmis says. She's just hormonal. She's just unhinged. She's just crazy. She's just on her period. She's just whatever. This was a place where you were, probably for the first time in a really, really long, if ever, able to scream out loud things about how you felt. What exactly is a rage ritual, you may be asking? Well, Branducci has led rage rituals for several years and began doing them first for herself, then for friends, and eventually as part of her days-long retreats, which include other activities and can range in price from $2,000 to $4,000. Her one-day version, she says, costs $222 per ticket. The process of a rage ritual is pretty simple. First, Branducci says, participants gather large sticks while conjuring to mind every person who's ever crossed you, who's ever hurt you, who's ever ignored your boundaries or taken advantage of you or abused you in any way. After some warm-up breaths, the screaming and swinging begin. The ritual is held in the woods, so participants can make noise without fear of bothering people nearby. Branducci isn't the only person who leads events dealing with rage. Secret Sanctuary will host a sacred rage ceremony in Alberta, Canada in July, and Jessica Ricchetti, an author and proclaimed mystic, will host a sacred rage women's retreat in North Carolina in June. When people do this and give themselves permission to release their anger, their capacity for joy actually expands, Branducci says. They're able to feel more happiness and pleasure, and they go home to their families with more gratitude and ease and peace. Unexpected feelings can also arise during a rage ritual. Helmis, for instance, thought her first rage ritual would address anger she felt towards her ex-husband. Instead, she felt something much deeper, a grief she's been holding onto since witnessing the death of a friend back when she was 15. I remember it was very kind of clear. It was like a light switch moment where I was like, oh, that's what this is about, she says. So many times I think you can't really feel a lot of stuff until you work through it. What does a therapist think of rage rituals? Psychotherapist Stephanie Sarkis says people deal with anger in a variety of ways, and there really isn't a one-size-fits-all solution to rage. For some, rage is better handled with activating strategies like hitting a punching bag or doing an intense workout. For others, soothing strategies like deep breaths, slow walks, or calm music work better. It's important to know how to process anger before undergoing a rage ritual, Sarkis says. When you do something like that, it's important to know, does it exasperate your anger or does it decrease it, she says. That's something that's on an individual basis. It depends on your past experiences. It depends on your own makeup. It depends on just brain chemistry. Still, Sarkis isn't against rage rituals. If they help you release anger, you can afford them, and they're done safely, she doesn't see any harm. I'm for whatever works within somebody's worldview, whatever works within their budget, whatever works within their own well-being and their own safety, she says. We're very individual. Why do rage rituals resonate with women in particular? Well, rage rituals seem to have struck a chord, particularly among women who write in social media comments how moving it is to see women let out their anger. Why did I have an immediate visceral reaction and start crying? One woman wrote. I literally cried seeing this. I need this, another wrote. As a now middle-aged woman with even more rage, I need this, wrote another. Sarkis says this isn't surprising. After all, women have been historically discouraged from embracing their right to feel anger, she says. Barducci says that while men are taught to suppress sadness, women are taught to suppress rage. It's like, don't be a bitch, or don't be angry, or don't be aggressive, or don't stand up for yourself, don't protect your integrity. Don't tell anyone that they don't have consent to touch your body or speak to you in a certain way, she says. There are particular emotions that are accepted in the gender binary that we need to feel. Men need to cry, and it's so healthy for men to cry, and women need to be able to get angry. By the end of their first rage ritual, Helma says participants were covered in dirt and mud with bruises and cuts on their hands. Sticks were broken everywhere. She says she got a lot from the experience and has done it twice since. It's really a place where you can go to be feral, be a wild woman, not looked at other than with love, acceptance, and maybe sometimes care. And this is about health. Again, it's from usatoday.com. And this is called Why Some Health Experts Are Making the Switch from Coffee to Cocoa Powder. Hannah Yardoff writes this again for USA Today. It's not just the basis for a tasty snowy day beverage. Cocoa powder popularity is on the rise as some health experts and wellness influencers laud it for certain health benefits. Cocoa sales are on the rise and expected to keep growing, at least in part due to demand for cocoa powder. That's according to a market research report that was published Thursday in Fairfield. And interest in cocoa powder spikes should you make the switch from drinking coffee or tea. Well, here's what nutrition experts want you to know. Is cocoa powder good for you? Cocoa powder does offer some health benefits, including antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties, registered dietitian Miranda Galletti told USA Today. Cocoa beans contain a component called flavanol, which have been linked to improve cardiovascular health and blood sugar control. That's according to Harvard Health. If you're in the market for a beverage to look forward to in the morning without the caffeine jitters, cocoa powder could be the answer. A tablespoon only has about 12 milligrams of caffeine compared to 25 to 50 milligrams in a cup of tea or around 100 to 150 in a typical cup of coffee. But Galati also wants to remind consumers that no single food or drink can transform your health. If you like drinking coffee, keep drinking coffee. If you enjoy the taste of cocoa, feel free to introduce that to your morning routine. What is healthier, coffee or cocoa powder? Well, many dietitians will tell you that the word healthiest is subjective. Those with different health goals or concerns may have very different definition of what's best for them. I wouldn't rely on either one for substantial health benefits, Galati says. Choose the one you prefer, but if you enjoy coffee for the alertness and mood improvements, it's probably a better bet. She adds, the healthiest foods in any category will depend on you, your budget, your culture, your health goals, and so much more. It's amazing to make more nutrient-dense choices when possible, but choosing the more processed or convenient option isn't always a bad thing either. As a registered dietitian who wants you to build a healthy lifestyle that lasts, I'd recommend ditching the idea that there are healthiest versions of anything. When it comes to coffee, both caffeinated and decaf offer similar health benefits, including links to healthy liver enzyme levels and decreased odds of developing colorectal cancer. That's according to Johns Hopkins Medicine. Caffeinated coffee can provide unique benefits like improved mood alertness and athletic performance, Galati says. But if it makes you jittery, anxious, or interferes with your sleep, decaf is the best bet, she adds. Decaf coffee offers a lot of the same benefits as regular without the potential downsides of caffeine. Decaf, Galati notes, also offers health-supported antioxidants and other psychochemicals that may protect against type 2 diabetes, mental decline, and even some cancers. For those who experience physical or mental side effects from caffeine, Galati suggests turning to decaf coffee or herbal tea, or even cocoa, might be an alternative. Well, that concludes the third hour of USA Today. Again, this is Thursday, and it is the ninth day of May 2024. My name is Mary McConnell. Thank you.